on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish. Plenty to talk about, even with all of the rain in the central west of New South Wales. They're loving it. We'll catch up with Jim Squibb with all the news there. Dirty Water Tailor Techniques first cast with Alex Bellissimo, a beach fishing guru, and how to set up to catch Ludric on fly with the flyboat skipper Stephen Gaynor, and Stinker's back as well. It's all coming up on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish, and Alex Bellissimo is a rare breed indeed. He's a beach, rock, and estuary land-based fishing guide because he gets seasick. So he's chosen the hardest job, but he's very good at it. We've had nearly 200 mils of rain, and guess what? He's still heading out to fish, which makes me think, Alex, that you have a strategy that a lot of rain won't dampen your trip and your client's time today. What are the plans?
Hey, mate, how are you?
Yeah,
anyway?
Good, Alex. Yeah, great. Mate, I know you've got to hit the water, so I'm getting straight to the chase because
yeah,
you're in,
in
demand. But, yeah, what are the strategies when it's been peeing down?
Well, okay, so you get estuary runoffs for a start. That creates a lot of brown water. And you'll find you'll get brown water on one side and you'll find it clear on the other side. Okay, so I tend to fish the other side where it's a bit clearer, right? That's if you can.
Mm.
The problem is, right, is that a lot of these spots are actually exposed to this southerly wind that we've got at the moment. So I'm choosing a spot that's out of the wind, also where there's less drainage going into the ocean. So we're going for tailor today, right? So my clients have actually booked me in for a tailor fish. And the bycatch you get there is also salmon, obviously.
Yeah,
the
great.
Salmon, it's a little bit early for the salmon yet, but there should be some salmon, and there may be a bycatch of brim as well, okay? And maybe, hopefully, even a dewey.
Well, the dirty water can be good for them too, can't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the spot that I'm fishing is out of – there isn't many runoffs, so the water's still fairly clear, even though we've had lots of rain, okay? So – some of the beaches are really brown, and some of them are still quite clear. They've got, like I say, I put it in a percentage of absolute clear is 100%, and the dirtiest you can get is, absolute clear is 1%, and dirtiest is 100%. It's probably down to about sort of, 70% clarity. Sorry.
Yeah, like a cup of.
I said it back to front. My apologies.
No, like a cup of weak tea, I guess.
Couple of weak tea, maybe even a bit weaker than that. Yes. So it's still relatively clear. Look, I'm expecting to catch tailor there. And look, there is an estuary runoff there, about a kilometre away, but because of the southerly, it's pushing it northbound rather than southbound. So
right.
It's not going to be going across the beach.
So you really got to know these conditions to pick your spots. And do the tailor like it a bit soupy?
Look, they don't mind it just a little bit dirty. It's like, okay, but people like to fish in really clear water. For kingfish, for example, right, and they think, well, clear, you know, if the water's nice and clear, you know, it'd be better for kings. But in actual fact, you can still get kings in fairly deep water, fairly dirty water as well, okay? So it's just a matter of going, well, look, I'm still going to get fish, but is the water that dirty? And the water isn't that dirty. So where I'm fishing, the water clarity is about 70% or 80% clear. It's quite good, but to the northern side of the beach, it's actually probably down to about 30%.
Yeah, that's where the runoff is. And you're saying the southerly wind has an influence in pushing that dirty water away from the clearer beach that you're fishing.
Well, it's not even the southerly. It's the southerly and the southerly swell. Okay, so you can have a southerly wind, but then a northeast swell, and it depends on which way the current's going. So if the current's going back across the beach, then the brown water's going to be spreading. But then it also depends on how big the beach is. See, a lot of the actual beaches on the northern beaches as well, Sydney, have got big drains, like big stormwater drains coming out, and that can actually create a lot of dirty water runoff as well. Okay, so like Manly Beach, for example, has got a couple of drains there. You've got North Stain and South Stain, DY Beach, Colroy Beach, Newport. There's a really big drain coming out of there. Just a few examples. So you don't necessarily even need a estuary runoff. You can just have a lot of runoff coming out from just the drains itself. It's going to be a bit less than what it would be, say, from, say, coming out of Queenscliff Lagoon, which is an estuary runoff, or like Narrabeen Lagoon, which is an estuary runoff. But you know, there's still quite a lot of dirty water, even though they're drains. So there's not that many drains. Well, the beaches I'm fishing this afternoon, there isn't much drainage coming out, and therefore there's not much, like stormwater drain that is, but there is an estuary on the northern side of it.
Yeah, and what about the Taylor, being an option at the moment? If you're going for them, they're obviously about. What's the story with Taylor at this time of year? Is it a bit early for them as well, or are they starting to really come on?
Oh, look, they're starting to come on. Like, traditionally, May is a really good month for them. But as you know, fish don't follow calendars, right? So, you can say, well, look, I done really well last May, but it doesn't necessarily mean this May is going to be really good.
Yeah, that's right. And I've got an appointment with a meter-long dewey, but she never seems to show up.
Well, he will show up, mate. He won't miss the appointment.
And it could be a chance of a mulloway. They do like a bit of that dirty water as an ambush predator, don't they?
Oh, look, there is a real chance for a dewey as well, okay, for a mulloway. So it may be lurking on that high tide. I think it's about a 7 o'clock high tide this evening, roughly around that 7-ish period.
The tides aren't bad at the moment, are they? The tides are pretty good.
Tides. They're very good. Yeah, they're very good tides. So one of the guys we went out fishing with recently, he got a 70-centimetre tailor, which is a big tailer. You know,
that's
probably at least
beast.
3.5 kilo.
That's a beast.
Tailor.
That
oh,
pulls
absolutely, yes.
Pulls harder than a metre dewey.
Well,
as
yeah,
hard anyway. It would pull as hard as an 80-centimetre dewey.
Absolutely, yeah. They pull hard. There's no doubt about that. But the thing is, right, it's actually, if you know your species, you go, wow, that's a really good quality tailor. And someone else that doesn't know their species goes, well, that's a pretty good size fish, but it's not as big as my shark.
No, that's a example, monster you know? Tailor. That's a monster tailor.
So, yeah. It's just like recently, I got a 45.5-centimetre whiting, right? And I showed a friend, and he said, oh, that's a reasonable fish. I suppose
what?
It's a good plate size
that's
fish.
That's as big as they get, mate.
Well, but the thing is, he doesn't know. So it's just an example. He doesn't fish, so he doesn't know that for that species, that's a whopping whiting.
Oh, that's a trophy.
It's a trophy tailor. But in some places, they get tailor that are 5 and 6 kilos, and some of the locals up the north coast would say, yeah, it's a pretty good tailor. But for Sydney siders, that's a great tailor.
Yeah, you know, obviously they're not all that size. What about the choppers? Are there good numbers?
Well, they're in reasonable numbers, so you'll get a bite. So I'm expecting a bite just around dusk as well, okay? So, so my clients are beginners, so we're actually doing a lot of casting and retrieving and fiddling around before we actually get onto the actual hot bite towards dark.
And Taylor, a great fish to start people on. They're so aggressive. They hit so hard. They fight so hard. They're great grilled fresh if you want to feed a fish, and they're plentiful. I think they're a great option. And one of the underrated fish, I think, Alex. I'd love catching Taylor on the beach. And if you get one, you're probably a chance to get your bag.
Mate, I cut my teeth on Taylor, as they say. You actually rarely hear that anymore. I cut my teeth. For people that don't know that, right, that means that's right. That was my beginning, was a Taylor and salmon off the beach. John Dory in the harbour, bream in the harbour, whiting. But it's Taylor fishing. I got some fantastic memories when I was very young. And I still have great memories catching. Look, I love catching Taylor now as much as I did 35, 40 years ago.
As much lead as you can get away with. I think that's one of the things often people aren't flexible with, how much weight they use. You carry gradings of sinkers, from little tiny balls right up to great big ones and everything in between, star sinkers, and just if you can get away with it, throw them in without any weight.
Well, if you can, but a good example is today where you can't fish with no single weight, and it depends on the person themselves, right? So really, it's not about how light you can fish. It's about how light you're capable of fishing. I think I may have said this in the past as well.
Yeah.
And people find that a bit unusual to say that, because fishing with the correct size sinker weight, you need to be able to know how to fish with that sinker weight rather than just going, I'm going to fish with a micro sinker weight, which is just too light for the level that you're at. You're better off fishing a bit heavier rather than lighter, and then lighten up as you get more experience and you're able to become more acquainted with your sinker weights rather than just going, I'm just going to fish with a light sinker weight.
And this beach you're heading to, are they sitting right in at your feet on the first gutter, or are they further out?
No, they're actually, so we're going to be wading out because it's a low tide period and we can get out to the back bank and we're actually fishing the edge.
Wow, that's...
So we're fishing over the back bank, fishing the edge, and then towards dark we're going to be fishing into a gutter.
Oh, fantastic plans. I know...
It's basically, we're basically starting around the low tide period.
Yeah, I know they're waiting for you, these keen tailor fishermen, and if anyone can put them onto a fish or two, my confidence is with you, Alex. Tight lines, mate. Thanks for sharing your tips, and it's great to know that there are a few tailor about. Best fish ever if you want to catch a few. And what about your 45-centimetre whiting, mate? I mean, gosh, you want to get that stuffed.
45 and a half. I'm a bit pedantic.
That's getting towards... that's getting towards Stinker's mythical 1 kilo whiting, isn't it?
Well, I think it was close to a kilo. I got an exact kilo whiting, which is a centimetre larger than that. Okay, and that was 2 pound 2 ounce. And I remember the person that taught me said, "Good on you, Alex. You finally caught yourself a kilo whiting. You'll probably never get one again."
Yeah, that's like catching the 1,000 pound marlin.
I nodded my head at him, and it was actually true. I never got a bigger whiter than that again.
No, they're like unicorns, those ones. Hey, get on the water, mate. It's great to talk to you. It's a safe way to fish beach fishing. Too many people get into trouble on the rocks. Go down to the beach or go out with Alex and you'll catch a fish. Tight lines, buddy.
Tight lines, too, mate. Thanks very much.
Alex Bellissimo there on the beach.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Killer Quentin and Bloody Mick went fishing out west for cod. They took Reshi along as their spiritual guide. He was known as the Jam Tin God. The trek had been planned for 6 long months and all was now in order. They were ready to go to the great beyond, just north of the Queensland border. With 1,000 yabby and 1 mile or more of worms, they had the bait to lure the fishing, meet them on equal terms. For the cod that come from the great beyond near the Never Go Dry Lagoon are the hardest cod in the world to catch. They don't waltz to the fisherman's tune. Well, the four-wheel drive was sardine-packed, the trailer stacked 10-foot high with boats and tackle and food and grog. The boys weren't going to go dry. They got to the river at the crack of dawn, an eerie mist on the water. The Jam Tin God stood up and proclaimed, "Bringeth the lamb to the slaughter." They set their lines, they made their camp, then Killer opened a beer. He drank a toast to a healthy catch and said, "Tell the cod we're here." Well, a tinkering bell was the first alert that the fish were on the bite, but the line hit the water, springer and all, and vanished out of sight. 10 more went as a frenzy began. There was little the boys could do. There was just no chance of grabbing the lines or their hands would be cut in two. The rot went on for 3 long days. The party was spent to a man, except, of course, for the Jam Tin God, who had one final plan. So they hooked the carcass of a fly-blown ewe to the anchor from one of the boats. The sheep had been dead for a good 2 weeks and stank like 1,000 goats. They secured the lot with a length of chain to an old rusty plough by a tree. So the Jam Tin God, "If the cod breaks out, he's far too good for me." Well, they whistled their way to their sleeping bags. It was a jovial fisherman's choir. Then Quentin sang some Al Jolson songs by the flickering light of the fire. They drifted off to the land of Nod, but soon awoke in fright as the murderous sound of a fish-drawn plough came thundering through the night. The plough was headed straight for the camp. The chain was glowing red. Gum trees snapped like matchsticks and the boys thought they were dead. But Bloody Mickey cracked the whip and said, "Quick, get in the truck. We can catch this sucker with half a chance and, you know, give it an ounce of luck." So they followed the plough for an hour or so, till the fish had finished its run. Then they tied the chain to the four-wheel drive and the battle had begun. Killer jumped in the driver's seat and with a look of satisfaction said the bloody cod's as good as caught. Get ready for some action. Well, the engine roared, the tyres spun, the boys were pushing hard. The sun came up and the sun went down. And they'd gone for just a yard. But they inched ahead, the cod was beat, the boys let out a cheer. As this Moby Dick of the inland sea, he started to appear. With a mouth as big as a block of flats, there was nothing he couldn't swallow. He was 40 foot from lip to gill, with plenty more to follow. Now Killer was clogging up overtime, the tyres were all but bald. While the others watched, as the fish came out, and the river began to fall. And all across the countryside, the rivers were running dry. From Mungindie to Shepparton, and the folk were asking why. The Darling was barely a trickle. The Murray ran hardly a drop. Till the PM flew in from Canberra and he begged the boys to stop. See, drought had hit the country bad and they'd finally found the cause. So the boys cut loose that super cod to national applause. The river levels rose again, the tragedy averted. The fishing party headed home, a trifle disconcerted. Now they'll tell you they've captured some big cod since. But the biggest, without a doubt, was the monster they caught but had to release to save the land from drought.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and we hate to be bearers of bad tidings for you. We always try to have a silver lining, to have solutions-based storytelling. And we've got the good news, because back on the 7th of March, Saturday the 7th of March, Jim and Dusty Squibb, who love their fishing in the Central West, were telling a tragic tale of the Turon River that had dried up, and shared some photos of these beautiful big cod that had died as well. And just the other day, Ken Smith, who you met the other day fishing at Wyangla, who's a terrific fisher from the Central West as well, shared a beautiful video of crystal clear, icy cold mountain water full of frisky rainbow trout. That was the Turon River. Jim Squibb, that must bring joy to your heart, mate.
Mate, it does. Good to see the fish there. I'm not exactly sure how many were released not long ago, but it was a pretty good number of good-sized fish. So it's good to see that the river's running again, and it's nice and clear, and the fish are there.
Tell you what, there's a bit of agitation to get some trout cod in there too, because they did live there in good numbers previously. So that might be something great to look forward to in the future too, because they fight like thrashing machines and they grow to, 80 centimetres long. So that could be the hope. But beautiful river there. And the Central West getting a bit of this rain, which is great for the fishing. How's it all going?
Good, mate. We had a bit of rain this week. A lot more a bit west of Bathurst where we are. I think Dubbo got, I think it was 50 to 80 mil. We didn't get that much here in the Bathurst area, but any rain at the moment is good rain.
Yeah, well, it was back on the 7th of March when we spoke to you, and the Turon had just started to run again after the best rainfall of a very dry year. They're predicting a dry winter, so we'll take whatever comes. Hopefully there's enough that comes through to charge up the aquifers and keep that beautiful stream running. And I know the Central Acclimatisation Society having a meeting coming up. What's on the agenda?
The agenda this weekend, I think, is the annual Cephala Carp Blitz. Talking about that and getting it, or it runs every year, but just prizes and whatever's going on for this year. So anyone listening, mate, that wants to do a bit of carp fishing and support a local community and some fish stocking should get out to the Cephala. And I think it's the last weekend in November. You'll have to check that, Scott, before then. But get out there and catch a few carp and get them out of the river and join in on a bit of fun.
I tell you what, they take a fly too, particularly in that cleaner, clearer water, and don't they fight? You're not worried if you lose them either, the big rubber loops. Didn't Dusty catch a thumper on fly?
He's caught quite a few. I think last year at the Cephala Carp Blitz, he caught most carp on fly, and I think he might have just got biggest carp on fly as well.
Wow, yeah, amazing stuff. I'm just having a look now on the Facebook page, Safala Carp Blitz, and there is a picture of Dusty holding one that's bigger than him. That would have given him a bit of sport,
mate. Yep, he still loves doing it. You know, in the Turon and the other local rivers, if you put the effort in, there's no problems getting, you know, 10, 20 fish in a day if you have a go.
Yeah, I was looking at the site there, and one of the kids got one 7.8 kilos.
Yep, mate, there's some big ones in there. I think the biggest one caught at the Safala Carp Blitz on fly, I think it's about, was Peter Hanrahan a long time ago, I think, it was a bit over 9 kilos.
Gee whiz, 9 kilos, that's amazing, yeah. Particularly on sports gear. I mean, it's just incredible. And that money then goes to stocking, does it?
Yeah, mate, does. All done, every dollar raised, DPI puts $2 for every dollar, and cod and yellow belly are brought from the fisheries and released into the local rivers.
Yeah, well, they are an amazing sports fish in those clear rivers, sight casting to them. You can use little soft plastics, little worms, love flies, or just flick an unweighted worm their way, or a little nymph or something, and you'll catch them.
Mate, even the good old corn kernels work for the carp.
And you've always got something to eat around the fire if you don't catch one.
No, you can eat them, Scott. I'm not.
No, I was talking about the corn, not the carp.
Yeah, right. I definitely take the corn over the carp.
much rather eat the bait than eat the fish. And is it a good social weekend, the Carp Blitz at Safala?
It is, mate. It is. It's directed around the kids a lot. Like, most of the kids will get a prize of some sort, whether it's a fishing magazine or a little lure. It's just a good weekend, good family event. You know, everyone should get out there and have a go at it. It's just a good event. Lots of prizes, lots of raffle prizes. They mix it up every year, so it's just a good one to get to.
All right, we'll put that in the diary for the end of November. More to come. There's a great Facebook presence, and they'll update that. And this weekend's the planning meeting. So have a good one, Jim Squibb.
No worries at all, Scott. Thank you.
Thanks for talking to us, and great to see that Turon running again and full of feisty rainbow trout.
Mate, it is. Let's hope they grow over the close season, and for the October weekend, when it all opens back up again, might be time to catch a few.
Oh, you've got my pulse racing. We might see you at the big muster as well again this year, coming up pretty soon.
We'll definitely be there. We'll definitely.
That's to bring back the Macquarie Perch. It's a fantastic project, that, isn't it? And how the River Blackfish have come back in the upper waters of the Macquarie. It's just very exciting.
Mate, it is. The Macquarie perch thing they're doing out there is a hat off to them, because they put a lot of effort and time into getting it going, and the numbers have increased really well now. So let's just hope it keeps happening, and we might end up with them back in our riverway shortly.
Well, last year I held one that was 30 centimetres, so who knows how big they are this year. Tight lines, Jim. Thanks for joining us from the Central West.
No worries, Scott.
Jim Squibb there on The Big Fish.
On ABC Radio, this is The Big Fish.
I'm gonna go fishing. That's what I do. Think about nothing. Not even you. Catch me a big one. Fine speckled trout. Snap in the water. I pull her right out. Deep in the water. Down go the line. Catch me a good one. Taste it for fried. Play out my reel now. Just how I feel now. I'm on a steer right now. Gonna catch me a trout.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi. The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
We've had rain, we've had wind, we've had high seas, and we've got Stinker there who decided to go out anyway. You're mad. You're absolutely mad. Tell us about your fishing adventures this week, Stinker.
Well, everyone agrees with you. That's true. It is. I reckon I certainly need to lie on a couch for a while. And fair dinkum, I really start to wonder about myself at times. I think I'm the only one in Port Stephens that went fishing this week. It is, the wind's been howling, the rain's pelted down, the sea's up to 3 metres. And anyway, of course, I've got a new motor, and the stink pot's in the boat shed looking at me all the time, and I'm thinking, oh, geez, I'd like to get out
there. For people who don't understand that, it's absolutely true, isn't it? It's got eyes on it.
It has got eyes. It's there. Well, it's part of the family, you see. Anyway, it all got too much for me on Wednesday, and so I got rugged up and put the big raincoat on and everything else, and I jumped in stink pot. And I took out some nice bait, and then I was quite confident. It was a bit wild. It was wild. But I thought, oh, well, you know, it should be okay. I saw that there was a bit of a southerly blowing, and the sea was just a touch over 2 metres. I thought everything might be okay. The biggest problem, Scott, is I head off to what was called the outer light. There's a lighthouse in front of the island at Fingal, in front of my house. And unfortunately, I can't see the spot where I'm going to go to. It's around the corner. So I've got to make a bit of an assumption. Well, sometimes I'm right and sometimes I'm wrong.
Were you right?
No.
What happened?
I was wrong. See, Fingal Bay... And I've lived here a long time, and I should be a lot smarter than I am. But what happened is Fingal Bay can be calm, relatively calm, and it all depends on the angle of the sea. Now, one that I went across Fingal in Notini and sort of full of hope and quite enthusiastic about the adventure there, and I went around the corner of the island, and I could see the waves smashing up onto the rock where I go fishing. It's called the Tommy Rocks, and there are three rocks, big rocks, the biggest house blocks in front of the lighthouse, and the sea just pounds it. It's a clash of rock and sea, and oh, it's pretty exciting, really. And so that's where I go, right in front, east of the lighthouse. And so out I go, and when I get there, I think, gee, this sea's a lot bigger than I thought. I thought, well, I'm going to drop anchor anyway. See, well, I dropped the anchor, but such was the surge that the anchor, anchor just kept straightening. Well, that's no good.
Because you use a kelleck, don't you, with prongers on it, with steel prongs.
Yeah, well, it's a reef anchor, and it can't, yeah. So just the force of the sea straightened the prongs. And so I really couldn't get set up. And one, people will tell you, or some will tell you, that there's no such thing as a freak wave. Well, I've seen them. I have seen a wave that come from absolutely nowhere, and you look at it and you think, wow, that is a big wave. And I saw one on Wednesday.
Gee, I hope it didn't get you, Stinker. I mean, that's you're in close to the reef and you fish where the white water is churning and washing and plunging and bucking down off that that reef and that rock shelf that goes down into about 60 feet of water that brings all of the crabs and all of the things that the snapper eat. But it's a pretty wild environment. You're very close to where it breaks, aren't you?
Well, I really am. Yeah, I'm right there. I'm sort of 30 metres away from it on the southern side. So I knew it wasn't going to get me. But when your waves sometimes change direction and they bounce off, it's all to do with physics, as I've mentioned, and wave action can be sometimes unpredictable. But anyway, I just sat there and I said, wow, this is a big wave. I go back a long time before I actually saw something similar. I was fishing off those three rocks in front of the lighthouse, I told you, Tommy Rock 1, 2, and 3. I was fishing off Tommy Rock 2 with a friend, and I said to my friend, I said, look, don't get too excited, but can you see about 100 metres away a very big wave coming our way? Well, he backed up to his back to the wave, and there was a bit of a shelf there. But I scampered up a little sort of a rise and then lay on the ground and faced the sea, expecting the wave not to reach me. Well, when the wave hit, it went straight over the top of my mate, and then it washed me off my spot down into a crevice. So I was upside down. Oh, in the crevice with my feet up, in amongst all the crabs and the barnacles. Yeah. And my mate hardly got wet, you know, because it went straight over the top of the ridge that he backed up to. And then we sort of shook ourselves off. He pulled me out of the crevice. And all my rod and everything went down there too. And I said, gee, you know, where did that come from? And It never happened again. Only happened one time. And well, that was what I saw on Wednesday, another one of these monster things. And they really you just sit back and think, wow, that's just fantastic.
Huge, absolutely huge. Yep. We're speaking with Stinker on the Big Fish, and he went out fishing in 3 metre seas. But how much bigger than the average swell, because it was a southerly swell, was that one that you reckon is the freak wave, which I think most people do believe in?
Well, look, you know, you'll get people, scientists and that, and tell you there's no such thing. Well, I'll tell you what, when you see them, and I've only ever seen two. It's not just something that pops up every day, but I spoke to an old lobster man of mate of mine here who's since passed on, a bloke called Ken Barry. And now Ken, who passed away, he was 94, and he started lobstering here when he was 20 years old. And I would sit and talk to Ken, and I asked him, I said, you've seen any, you know, in your experience, because he's on the water every day. He had 40 lobster traps.
Yeah, you'd know.
And because he physically lifted them too. So he was a very strong man. And I said, you ever come across any of these big, you know, waves? Oh, yes, he said. You know, far too often you're in the boat near a reef, and then the wave comes and picks you up and can put you straight over the other side of the reef. And it comes out of nowhere. It's very interesting in a sort of a strange way. But anyway, I decided after it was raining and I couldn't hold the reef. So I said, oh, well, I'm quitting. So I went back, went past the apple tree, couldn't fish the apple tree because it was the wrong wind. I need a nor'easter for the apple tree. So what I did, I went back into the Fingal Bay and I motored along inside Fingal Bay on the western wall of the island. And there, and I've seen them many, many times, are two of the most beautiful birds I have ever seen. And they're big sea eagles, big white-chested, white-breasted sea eagles, and they mate for life. sea eagles. I don't know how long they live. I must do a bit of research on them and find a bit more about them. But there they were, and so I cut the motor and just sat and sort of looked at them for a while. They're beautiful birds, sea eagle.
They were probably looking at you and saying, "There's Stinker."
Yeah, well, I reckon they were, because I'll tell you, when you're in the lobster season, that's August, September, around there, or even a bit earlier, June, July, I go out lobstering, and the bait that I take out of my lobster trap, I hold it up in the, this is the bait, you've got to change bait every 2 days. So the 2-day-old bait, I hold up in the air and shake it in front of these sea eagles, and they look straight at me, and then I throw the bait up onto the rocks, and they'll swoop straight down. But I haven't done that for 6 months. But I went over there on Wednesday, and there's the two of them up in the tree, and I didn't have anything except for a couple of yellowtail that I had for bait. So I got them and I threw the yellowtail back behind the boat, only sort of 10 metres behind the boat, and they floated and down they swooped. Oh, what a sight, to the back of the boat, and then with their claws or talons, they grabbed the yellowtail and then straight up into the air and back up onto the tree. Oh, I never went fishing, but I had a great time.
It's always something to do, Stinker. Tight lines, mate, and eventually you'll get out and get into them.
Well, you'd hope so. I mean, it can't rain forever.
No, it's supposed to be clearing up, so we're just batting down the hatches until it's all gone.
Okay, here, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Oh, let me tell you about Blackfish Lynn. She's on the weed again, fishing again. If you need a feed again, she's got the gear to make you plead again. So just to be clear, if you succeed again, you know where I've been. You've been with Blackfish Lynn. Blackfish Lynn, she's on the telephone dealing again. She always sounds so stoned, reeling in men. She's got the gear, and when you see her again, you're guaranteed to win. I know where you've been. You've been with Blackfish Lynn. Blackfish Lynn will make you gloat. She's got the quality weed. Blackfish Lynn will float your boat. You will succeed. Oh, let me tell you about Blackfish Lynn. She always has a bag of weed hidden in her favorite garden gnome. Leave her a note. If she's not in, she's in her flat bottom boat. If you're in need again, I know where you've been. You've been with Blackfish Lynn. Got the quality weed. Blackfish Lynn will float your boat. You will succeed. Let me tell you about Blackfish Lynn. She's got a bag of weed hidden in her favorite garden gnome. Leave her a note. If she's not in, she's in her flat bottom boat. If you're in need again, I know where you've been. You've been with Blackfish Lynn.
It's the Big Fish, and you don't have to travel to Montana to tackle with hard-fighting fish on fly. Just about every estuary, every rock wall, every bay near you has an option where you can fly fish for a really great hard-fighting fish that's good on the table too. Stephen Gaynor is a real advocate of fly fishing for Luderich and loves it. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Scott. How are you, buddy?
Not too bad at all, flyboat skipper. The weather's been a bit wild, but a bit of colour actually gets the blackfish going. They get down, don't they?
Not bad. It's not bad. It's getting all that weed, bashing it off the rocks. The water temperature's dropping at the same time, so they're going to get, you know, feed up, get ready to spawn. It's exactly what we need, really.
I would be thinking that your standard 6-weight fly rod, 6-weight floating line, standard tapered leader, the weed flies are just so easy to tie buy. Even the bait fishermen are using them. And that's an indicator. Maybe a bit of greasy wool or buy a better one. Is that enough?
Mate, that's exactly. That's all you need. Just keep it simple, the KISS method, you know. Maybe a little bit of split shot, you know, because I prefer to have a bit of split shot a little bit up the line than a weighted fly, just for that little bit more natural movement. But, yeah, it's super simple. I personally just love watching an indicator. Look, I've said it before. It's scientifically proven to be mentally good for you, staring at an indicator for half an hour. So, no, it is. Like, it's legitimately, it clears the mind. You just stare at it, wait for it to go down, and then it's like, do I strike on the little down? Do I strike on the big down? But then you know when you see that blackfish in the corner of your eye, there's something about a blackfish that's about to eat, you pick it straight away. Bang, down, you're on.
Yeah, it really is a zen-like pursuit, isn't it? And it's great for your reflexes as well, and great for your focus, isn't it? Because nothing else in the world exists, rather that little orange piece of wool on the surface.
Exactly.
That's your whole universe.
Well, you know, But there's other things, like you're thinking about, it's just like trout fishing. You're thinking about the drift. Is there any drag on that drift? Is the wind pulling on the fly line? You know, is it starting to swing up? Is it going too slow? Am I in the zone? So it's not like you're completely blank, but it is meditative, so it's good for you. So you should be allowed to go fishing for blackfish whenever you want.
Oh, yeah, and I love them to eat. It take the skin off and a nice boneless fillet. They're a really good white fillet of fish, and in huge numbers, Steve. I think that's the beauty. You're not depleting any resource. It's a very sustainable thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, mate. There's absolutely no impact on the fish, you know, for recreational people. You've just got a burley. You know, burley's what sort of tops it for me. And then, you know, some of the burley we're using is as good as the most quality bait you'll ever find. So, you know, especially after these rains, start walking the drains, look for your weed, guard it with your life.
Do you match the colour of your material in the fly to the weed that you've collected?
I do and I don't. Look, I'm a creature of habit, to be honest. I've got my particular product that I use that's a really, really, really good product. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it on air, but, you know, I stick with what I know, with what gives me confidence, and I find that's more important than everything.
Yeah, most of the flies that I've tied are not with a darker green, with a sort of a lighter green that could be the colour of cabbage as well. A more kelpy green than a dark weed green, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not into that dark weed green colour. And as I said, like, what you said, they'll eat the weed and they'll eat the cabbage. Like, you can use the same fly. Now, I guess with burling, you've got to be careful not to burly up too much. You can overfeed them.
And you don't want it to take them away either. You want to make sure that the weed and the sand is dropping down where you're putting your fly.
Yeah, but mate, like right now, it's the beginning of the season for them, so it should be, I don't know, I'm thinking it's going to be a good year.
Are you seeing them already?
Oh, yeah. There was, even in the Stillwater and Watson's Bay a few weeks ago, there would have been, I don't know, a few hundred right in on the shore, stirring it all up.
And they get really
head down, tails up. And
they get really big in Sydney Harbour too, don't they? They're big oceanic blackfish. It's nothing to get, you know, all your fish over 30 centimetres. I mean, up in the creeks and rivers, sometimes they're a lot smaller than that. But these are big, robust, beautiful-looking, shiny blackfish, aren't they?
Oh, look, we're only after 40-centimetre fish. I don't know what you're talking about, 30s.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but you know,
and again, it's like trout. It's all about condition. You know, you can have a half-metre-long trout, but if it's in weak condition, It's nothing. Well, all these fish are solid, strong fish. They are, you know, I've been taken to the back end on a 6 weight.
Yeah, why are they so fat and healthy in there? What are they? Is it just weed that they eat, or there's got to be some protein in there as well? I don't know.
Well, they definitely become omnivores in winter. I remember back when I was younger, and I'd be watching all the guys with the blackfish using the weed, and I'd be stumped going, why can't I do that? What's going on? As soon as I went and pumped some nippers, bang, blackfish, blackfish, blackfish. So yeah. I know for a fact, like, my biggest blackfish I've ever caught was on a nipper.
Yeah, they love nippers and love worms too. They love worms.
Oh, exactly. But it's like anything, you know. There's nothing like getting one on a nice weed fly that you've tied yourself. You've watched the indicator drop down, or you haven't used an indicator. You're just staying in touch with it, and you know that almighty wallop they give you, bang, and the rod bounces, and you lift, and you're on.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, and it's even fun when you're on, and then you're off for a second, you know?
It's the big fish. We're speaking with Stephen Gaynor, who just loves targeting big Sydney Harbour blackfish on his fly rod with weed flies and a bit of sand and a bit of chopped weed for burley, sow and pigs, and all around the rock washes. It's a great place when you find a little bit of that washy water and you see those blackfish flashing there. Right, you can get them right under the sails of the Opera House. I saw one of the best schools of blackfish.
Man o' War Wharf
is just an amazing place. You can stand there and watch them for ages, and they're in such big numbers. And as you say, they fight like billy-o. They really do give you a really good run for the money. It's so addictive, and they will grab that fly. And I think if someone wants to learn how to tie flies,
this is the easiest
fly in the world to tie. Is there any technique that people should worry about, or you just lash it on?
Look, there is a little bit of technique, obviously. I like to cover the hook as much as possible, but still having. So I like a Gamagatsu pan hook. I'll tie two bundles on. I'll tie a little bit on the right at the shank of the hook, and then another one just before the eye of the hook. So it sort of covers everything kind of neatly. I'll always tie them oversized so that when I get on the day, whenever I'm using them, I can trim it as needed. I think that's vital important. You know, some days, it's like anything, they'll either be interested in a big bait or a little bait. So I try to just be aware of that and, you know, mitigate it.
Size 10 hook, what's your favourite hook size?
I'm using size 4 pan hooks. So there's a little green Gamagatsu one.
Oh, yeah, the green weed hook. And do you use a little bit of Velcro to tease out the material?
I do. Generally, my little one's comb. Depends what's around, just what I've stolen at the time. But, you don't have to be too technical. You don't need the gear. Just tie on a bit of weed and throw it out there. You know, we really overthink a lot of stuff. So even with the trout, we overthink it, mate. When they're hungry, they're going to eat.
Yeah. And I think the thing about Ludric flies or weed flies now is because so many of the bait fishermen have a dropper with one of those on as well as the bait, they're probably one of the few flies, unweighted flies, that just about everyone would see in every tackle shop.
Yeah. They're always next to the cash register. 100%. You're dead right. But you know why they're so effective? Because it's time in the water. Every time you get it down on a little bit of weed, you got to pick it back up, you got to put on a bit of weed, go again. Now, again, that was my other drawback when I was a kid fishing for Ludric. I couldn't put the weed on to save my life. With a weed fly, drop it in the water, gets down, lift, bugger, didn't get a hook up, bang, drop it down again. You are effectively fishing the whole time. And, you know, that's what fishing's all about, you know. When you got a bait or a lure or a fly in the water, you have a chance of catching fish. So
That's right. They're not flying fish. That's such a good point, Stephen. And really, if you want to get weed to stay on a hook too, you've got to plait it on properly. You've got to measure it. You've got to, you know, plait it over itself and around the hook. There's a real technique. All the time you're doing that, you could have a green weed fly wafting down in front of their mouth and hooking a 40-centimetre Ludric. Hey, mate, it's just a fantastic way to fish. It really is. Grab some green weed flies. Even if you haven't got a fly rod, you can get a starter kit with a reel and a floating line for $100+.
Even on a spin rod, Scott, just, you know, put out a little bobby cork and just play around with it. It's not rocket science.
No.
It's a small little bit of split shot to get down and just get in there and try it. And the good thing about it, you've got numbers of fish, so you're going to have lots of opportunities.
Yep. If you're seeing those Ludric school up in the estuary near you or off the rocks near you. Take care and get into it. Tight line, Steve. You've got us excited for the blackfish season. It's one very good reason to get excited around winter time.
Legend, mate. You have a great weekend.